Let me ask you something before we do anything else. You're an hour into a cross country. The airplane is running fine, the weather is behaving, and your destination is 40 miles off the nose. And then the examiner sitting next to you looks out the window and says, real casual, yeah, I just heard your destination went below minimums. Take us somewhere else. What do you do in the next 10 seconds? If your honest answer is, I'd pull out my phone and hit the nearest button, I want to talk to you today. Because that skill, the in-flight diversion, is one of the most real things we teach, and it's one of the things students practice the least. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern, the show where we try to make you a little bit safer and a little bit sharper every time you strap in. Today we are going to walk through the diversion together, not the theory of it, the actual doing of it, the way it happens in the airplane, with your knee shaking a little and the examiner watching. Before we get into it, a quick word about some folks I genuinely like. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, the ones that cost you sweat and money and a whole lot of go-arounds. aviationsoul.com. All right, the diversion. Here's why this matters, and I want to be honest with you about it. Most of your cross-country training is spent on the plan. You sit at the kitchen table the night before. You draw a line on the chart. You fill in the nav log. You check the winds aloft. You compute your headings and your ground speed and your fuel burn leg by leg. And that's good work. That's real work. The examiner is going to want to see all of it. But here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The whole point of learning to plan a cross country is so that you can throw the plan away when you have to. Because the plan assumes the destination is open. The plan assumes the weather stays put. The plan assumes the engine keeps making the noise you want it to make. And the day the plan is wrong is exactly the day you need to be good at flying without it. The Airman Certification Standards, the ACS, has a whole task for this. It's in the cross-country area of operation, and it's called diversion. The examiner is required to give it to you. It is not optional. They will, at some point, usually when you're relaxed and feeling good about the flight, close your destination and make you go somewhere else. And they are watching for a specific set of things. Let me tell you what they're actually looking for, because it's simpler than you think. The examiner is looking for a pilot who flies the airplane first, then makes a reasonable decision quickly, then executes it and monitors it. That's the whole game. They are not looking for the mathematically perfect heading. They are not looking for you to nail your ground speed to the tenth of a knot. They are looking for a safe, timely, sensible diversion. So let's build the habit. I'm going to give you a flow, and I want you to notice the order because the order is the whole thing. The first step, the very first thing before you touch a chart, before you touch your phone, before you say a single word to anybody, is fly the airplane. Pick a heading in the general direction you think you want to go and turn to it. Right now, you do not need to know the exact heading. You need to be pointed roughly the right way while your brain catches up. Here's what I see students do wrong, and I did it too. The examiner says divert, and the student's head goes down into the cockpit. They start folding the chart, they start punching the GPS, they start doing math, and the airplane just quietly starts a descending turn toward the ground while nobody is flying it. I have watched a perfectly good pilot lose 200 feet and 15 degrees of heading because they went heads down to solve a problem that was not going to solve itself in the next 30 seconds. So, fly first, turn the airplane toward the general area of your new airport, level the wings, trim for level flight, and get your eyes back outside. The problem can wait 90 seconds. The airplane cannot. Now, step two, pick your airport. This is where a little bit of pre-flight thinking pays off enormously. When you plan your cross-country, you should already know what's along your route. You should have looked at the chart and gone, okay, if something happens on this leg, I've got that towered field to the south, I've got that little grass strip to the north, I've got a nice long county airport about halfway. You don't memorize them, you just get familiar, so that when the examiner pulls the rug out, you're not seeing the chart for the first time. When you pick, think about a few things, and think about them fast. How close is it? Which direction, relative to where you're already pointed, because turning around and flying back the way you came burns time and fuel and looks bad. What kind of airport is it? Do you have the fuel and the runway and the daylight to make it work? And what's the weather doing over there? Because diverting from bad weather into more bad weather is not a diversion. It's a delay. Closest is not always best. Let me say that again, because it's the thing the nearest airport button on your GPS will never tell you. The closest airport is not always the best airport. The Magenta Line will happily send you to a 2,000-foot strip with a crosswind and no fuel when there's a beautiful 5,000-foot runway with an operating FBO 10 miles further on. The machine doesn't know the difference. You do? That's your job. All right, you've turned the airplane, you've picked your field. Step three. Now, and only now, you figure out the details. And here's the old school skill that I love and that the examiner loves to see because it tells them you actually understand what you're doing. You estimate your heading, your distance, your time, and your fuel by eye and by thumb. Let's walk through this together. Heading first. Look at your chart. Find your present position. Find your new airport and lay something straight between them. Your finger, a pencil, the edge of your plotter, whatever. You're just trying to see the direction. Is it roughly northeast? Roughly south? You don't need a protractor reading to the degree. You need to know that you should be pointed, say, about 030, and then you turn to 030 and fine-tune it visually against landmarks as you go. Remember, your chart is oriented to true north, and your compass and heading indicator are magnetic. So account for your local variation, but honestly, for a diversion, get the airplane pointed the right way and refine it. Don't paralyze yourself with the math. Now distance. Here's the thumb trick, and it's a good one. On a sectional chart, the standard scale means you can use the markings right on the chart, but the fastest field method is to know the width of your own fingers against the chart's latitude scale, or just use the little tick marks. Even simpler, glance at your nav log. You already know roughly where you are along your planned route, and you know the distances on your chart. If your new airport is about, let's call it, 30 nautical miles away, that's your number, round it. 30. Don't chase precision you don't need. Then time, this is just distance divided by ground speed, and you can do it in your head with rules of thumb. At a ground speed of about 120 knots, you're covering 2 miles every minute. So 30 miles is about 15 minutes. At 90 knots, you're doing 1.5 miles a minute, so 30 miles is about 20 minutes. You do not need an E6B for this. You need to know your 2 times and your 1.5 times tables. If you know your ground speed and you know your distance, you can estimate your time to the airport in about 4 seconds of mental math. And notice your ground speed, you already had that. You computed it in cruise, you've been checking it, so you're not starting from zero. This is the payoff for all the planning. The plan gave you the tools. Now you're using them freehand. Last piece, fuel. Time times fuel burn. If you're burning, let's say, 8 gallons an hour, and your diversion is going to take 15 minutes, that's 1/4 of an hour, that's 2 gallons to get there. Then ask the real question, which is not can I make it, it's will I land with my required reserves, plus a comfortable pad on top. For day VFR, the regulation, that's 14 CFR 91.151, requires you to plan to arrive with at least 30 minutes of fuel at normal cruise. At night, it's 45 minutes. But I'm going to be the honest instructor here. 30 minutes is a legal minimum, not a personal goal. If your diversion leaves you sniffing the bottom of the tanks with exactly the legal reserve, pick a closer airport. Fuel is the one thing you cannot negotiate with. So that's the sequence. Fly the airplane, pick the airport, estimate heading, distance, time, and fuel. Turn and go. Let me put it in a real scenario because that's how this stuff actually sticks. Picture a Cessna 172. You, a student. An examiner in the right seat, a nice afternoon, you're northbound on the second leg of your cross country, cruising at about 110 knots ground speed, 40 miles south of your planned destination. And everything is beautiful. You've just settled in, you're feeling good, you might even be a little proud of yourself. And, the examiner says, airport's reporting a broken layer at 800 and visibility dropping. We're not getting in there, divert, watch the good pilot. The good pilot does not answer with words, the good pilot's hands answer first. Wings level, verify altitude, trim it. Done. The airplane is stable. Now the head comes down for a moment. There's a towered field about 25 miles off to the northeast, 5,000 foot runway, fuel, and it's on the sunny side of the weather. Perfect finger on the chart. The heading looks like about 040. Turn to 040, eyes back outside, pick a landmark on the nose to hold that heading, refine it. Now the math, out loud, because saying it out loud keeps you honest and shows the examiner your brain is working. 25 miles, ground speed about 120 in this direction, call it 2 miles a minute, so roughly 12, 13 minutes, Fuel burn 8 gallons an hour, so about 2 gallons for the leg, and I've got an hour and a half in the tanks, so reserves are no problem. Great. I'm going there. And then, step 4, the one everybody forgets you tell somebody. If you've got flight following, which on a cross country you really ought to, you key the mic and you say, in plain, calm English, that you're diverting. Something like, approach, Skyhawk such and such is diverting to the new airport due to weather at our destination, requesting the current altimeter and any traffic. That's it. You don't have to be fancy. Air traffic control is not grading your radio poetry. They want to know where you're going so they can keep everyone apart and help you if you need it. And if you're not talking to anybody, at a minimum you get the weather at your new field you set up for the arrival, and you keep flying the airplane, which is always, always the last item and the first item and every item in between. Here's the part I really want to land for you. The diversion is not a math test. It feels like a math test when you're a student because you're terrified of getting the heading wrong by 10 degrees. But 10 degrees over 25 miles is nothing you can't see and fix out the window. What actually fails people on this task, and what actually hurts people in the real world, is not bad arithmetic. It's the head going down and staying down. It's fixating on the chart while the airplane wanders. It's picking an airport that's too small or too far or downwind of the exact weather you're running from. It's forgetting that the required fuel reserve is a floor, not a plan. So, if you take one thing from today, take the order. Aviate, navigate, communicate, in that sequence every single time. Fly the airplane, point it the right way. Do the quick, rough, good enough math, talk to somebody, and keep flying the airplane. And practice it. Please, practice it. Next time you and your instructor are up doing a cross-country, have them close your destination on you without warning. Do it with the GPS turned off, or at least the nearest airport page hidden, so you have to use the chart and your thumb and your head. Do it until it stops feeling like an ambush and starts feeling like just another thing you know how to do, because the goal isn't to pass the checkride task. The goal is that on some gray afternoon years from now, when a real airport really does go down in front of you, your hands are already turning the airplane before your brain has even finished being surprised. That's the pilot the examiner is looking for. And more importantly, that's the pilot your passengers deserve. The procedures I walked through today come straight out of the FAA's Airman Certification Standards and the Airplane Flying Handbook, and the fuel rules are right there in the federal regulations, Part 91 if you want to read them in your own words tonight. I'd encourage you to. If you want more of these walkthroughs, they're up at radiohanger.com. Go find an instructor, close a destination, and turn the airplane. I'll see you next time.